The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Thank you for the good times. Thank you for your love. Thank you for the joy you've given me. Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about creating a better workplace and developing positive relationships where people can thrive. I'm Max Brown, along with my colleague Roy Saunderson, and we're from the Recognition Management Institute. Roy, how are you today?
I'm just wonderful. Thank you, Max.
Excellent, excellent. You know, it's a very, very exciting day. We're discussing a lot of fun things, as you're well aware, talking about organizations and how it's just, you know, well, people that are struggling to try to make a profit and not realizing that if they engage their best asset, their employees in it, that they would actually thrive or even become better, linking them with values, with meaning, with purpose, as opposed to just beating people down all the time and telling them how they never deliver.
I know.
It gets me excited.
It's true. We got to do it the right way. And you know, Max, you know, there's a lot of organizations that are out there just kind of grappling with all this, and it's probably due to a lot of the toxicity that's in the workplace and the culture that they've got going for them, and they struggle behind this whole, you know, make the profits, right? And yet this whole concept of you got to make a difference. Why do you think people have this big struggle between connecting, making a difference, and yet also trying to make profits?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you ask that, because for me, I was just reading an article yesterday from MSNBC that was talking about how executives, there's a scary trend happening where a lot of executives, not everyone, but some mm-hmm. executives have been making more money as they cut people and destroying morale, destroying workplaces, and they're getting huge rewards for this.
Go figure.
Yeah, it's very, very backwards, because you're destroying morale, destroying loyalty, killing organizations, and I think it's hard for people to reconcile, number one, how do I actually be a leader and encourage and do great results?
Right.
How can I do that in a loving way, if you will? How can I do that in a supportive way, as opposed to a fear-based leadership, which I think is something that came from the past and a lot of people have kind of hung on to?
Yeah, I'd agree.
So, you know, let's get right to it, because our guest today knows a lot about this stuff, as I'm sure you would agree with me, Roy,
mm-hmm,
on that.
Mm-hmm.
New York Times bestseller, international bestselling author, Tim Sanders, folks, he's with us today. I am delighted. Mixed with his personal experience, Tim consults with Fortune 500 executives on marketing, internet strategy to write his best-selling books on business. His first book, Love is the Killer App, How to Win Business and Influence Friends, stresses the importance of knowledge sharing, networking, and compassion. His follow-up, The Likeability Factor, explains the concept of emotional talent and the importance of creating an engaging experience. And his newest book, although he does have another one after this now, as Roy and I have been talking today, but Saving the World at Work examines the external relationships between a business and society, focusing on how businesses can follow corporate social responsibility and sustainable principles and still make a profit. I would even go so far as saying that make more profit, or at least be more successful than those who have struggled in the past. Tim speaks for a strong business relationships, both internal and external. His Los Angeles-based company, Deeper Media, conducts research on business trends, new media, and human behavior, and his work is frequently featured in media, most recently the New York Times, Financial Times, Wall Street Journal, Fast Company. And Tim, we know you have another book you're working on, and you're always doing some great work. Thank you for being here. Welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, Tim, you call yourself the people-centric business expert. Maybe we'll start there with what does that mean, and why are you so passionate about all this?
It was like 2000, and I was speaking at a conference. I was an executive at the time at Yahoo, and a consultant comes up to me after the talk, and she works for one of the big, you know, consulting firms. And her question for me was, what's the next big thing in business? Now, you can imagine in 2000, that was always a big question.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember without even thinking about it, thinking, you know, more about my mentor, Stanley Marcus Jr., I replied, people are the next big thing. And for some particular reason, I've always gravitated to human resource, meaning a company is basically its conceptual promise and the people that surround it. And that process is called operations.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't mechanize a business. Even Google, which had self-service advertising from 2003 on, is not mechanized. It's got 14,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of them is important. So I believe that when we understand the human dynamic as well as we understand the financial dynamic, we can create a sustainable enterprise.
Mm-hmm. So how do we go about doing that? How do we get there? As you know, Roy and I started this show actually talking about why this disconnect with people then that struggle with this concept.
Well, you know, I think that there is a fear that we never be weak in the business world. And I don't know if I'm going to blame it on the military sports metaphors that have permeated the conference circuit. But there is a macho factor to business that cannot be denied.
Yes.
Everywhere but Europe, where you had better be the tougher guy in the equation or you'll lose your job.
Mm-hmm.
No one's ever lost their job for being cynical or paranoid, but many have lost their jobs for being hopeful and innovative. They throw those guys out every time the market turns south, and they vilify them. So there's that stigma. That's number one. Number two, we always have this discussion about companies that use people, not money, after a recession.
Yeah.
Because in the go-go market, what you really read about are companies that are giving back. So what that means is that when a corporation or a person, when their self-image is great, they feel a luxury, almost a necessity to give something back so as to preserve the windfall. It's almost like superstition, right?
Mm-hmm.
That goes away the minute the market turns south. What happens instead is that the average business leader, at some point, whether they do it initially or a year later, they personalize every recession. In other words, they believe that the recession is an accurate viewpoint of the quality of their business concept.
Mm-hmm.
So when your business drops because there's a broad recession, you say, "It's something's wrong here, and it's
mm-hmm.
us." And you personalize it at some point. It's good old USA pride. And once you do that, then it's sackcloth and ashes time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to shrink your way down to survival. And when you look at people and you look at luxuries like giving and employee development, you say, that is so 2007.
Yes.
Right? And it's a really natural thing. And I hope that we can learn a lot from Northern Europe, like what I see in business in, say, Sweden and Finland, et cetera, where there's a much, much less of a masculine influence in business, much more of a feminine, nurturing influence in business.
Mm.
Because, you know, if we had that, we would have a viewpoint that says, and this is like Dr. Daniel Goleman would support this, the mood state,
mm-hmm.
that's what leaders are responsible for. It's sort of like Ed Deming back in the 80s when he showed up, you know, during the quality movement when we were all trying to play catch-up, and he would ask managers, what's your job?
Yep.
The manager says, I run the packing group. He'd say, wrong. Go to the next guy, what's your job? Well, I run quality circles. He says, wrong. He says, all of your jobs, one thing, manage the system for quality, right? So I think that where we're at right now is that in the modern enterprise, socially media-driven, with the new generation that frankly doesn't want to work,
mm-hmm.
they just want to make money, you'd better produce a strong positive mood state in your organization. People need to come to work with a song in their heart instead of a pit in their stomach, because there's great data that proves if you get it wrong, your profits will decline, and they'll decline extra fast in a recession because you'll have low engagement and customers that aren't that happy.
Yes. And there are some that I think are struggling because they know this. You know, they've spent even billions of dollars, perhaps, in some of these bigger organizations trying to find the golden elixir,
but hoping that it comes in the form of a program or a system as opposed to the way they treat each other.
Yep, that's right. You know, and I was at a speaking engagement a few years ago, and Ed Lasseter from Pixar was there. And Ed's great. I mean, those guys have done such incredible things with movies. And, you know, a movie is just 1,000 little solutions to a bad idea. That's what Ed says. You know what I mean? Somebody's got a stupid idea, and you figure out 1,000 ways around all the objections, and boom, you've got Toy Story. So Ed says, he gets asked this all the time, what would you rather have, a world-class idea or a world-class person reporting to you? And he says, I'll take the world-class person every time, because 5 idiots can screw up a perfect idea.
So how is this received? How is this received when it comes to... Well, let's talk specifically around the message you've been trying to put out there for a long time, and successfully, obviously. I mean, you're selling lots and lots of books. Lots of people are talking about the message that you deliver. So how is the message of love and compassion and likability, and how are they being received in the workplace?
Well, they have to be presented correctly to have traction, you know. So when I go into organizations and talk, you know, the first thing I talk about is the financial results that come from doing the right thing for people. So I have to establish right off the bat a couple of things. You know, it costs 5 times salary to replace talent.
Yeah.
Unless they have more than 500 aggregate followers in social media, then it costs 22.5 times salary if it's an acrimonious breakup. And then everybody goes, what? Right?
So it costs a lot of money.
Right. And so all of a sudden, you know, the rules change a little bit, and it says, you know, it's not just about retention. It's about brand preservation. The employership brand is becoming the consumer brand.
Yes.
Right? I advocate that HR report to the CMO, not the CFO. And people go, what? So the first thing you got to do is talk about the financial results here.
Mm-hmm.
The research from 1911 to current date, done by economists on post-recession business environments, says 2 things. Number one, the Phoenix companies. These are the companies that always seem to benefit at the bottom, like Chevrolet and like General Mills, companies that came out of nowhere after the Great Depression and mopped up. How did they do it? Well, they did these symbolic yet profound things like not letting people go, making investments in local community. In the case of Steelcase in Michigan, they adopted wellness programming. I mean, all these things you would never do in a pit that were symbolic. So as the market came back, they became the preferred employer, the preferred partner, the good guy in a world of bad guys. And what they're learning is the things you do that impact regular folks like you and I, the things you do at the bottom have a huge impact at the next top, which leads me to the second point here. If you use people and love money, and I'm going to talk HR talk here. If you use people as a business and you let them go at the bottom and you treat the ones that are remaining awful, like you should be glad to have a job, do 2 at once, right? And you do this. The add-back season is hard. The add-back season is that period of time that we're going to see over the next few years when everybody's got to ramp back up.
Mm-hmm.
And because we haven't had a lot of tech innovations, we're going to have to actually put more bodies on stuff than we used to because we're competing with markets that will put 8 times more bodies on stuff than us.
Yes.
And you're going to be in what they call the add-back season. That's where you got to get really good people really quick, and you can't offer a lot of money, and you got no stock options now.
Yep.
And the add-back season is a beauty contest.
Mm-hmm.
And with social media, it's even worse.
Mm-hmm.
So if you didn't behave right in 2008, 9, 10, and 11... In 2015 and 2016, when there's a massive delta of talent, they're going to go, oh, yeah, those guys?
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend that used to work there.
Yep.
You know, so I think we have to be very careful to understand that this is a business cycle, and there will be another top, and that bankruptcies, takeovers, and having your market share bubble bursted, they don't happen at the bottom, they happen at the top. Trust me. I worked at Yahoo. I know this.
No, right? Absolutely.
So where the real collateral damage happens to you competitively in the world is at the top of every market. You'd better be ready, I say. So, you know, that doesn't mean that you can't have layoffs. Because if you're a public company sometimes, there's just, you know, your CFO is going to get fired if you don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The question is, how do you do it?
Yeah.
And the question then is, you know, how do you recondition yourself to say, okay, during the ad back season, I'm going to make every new rec beg for its life. Because I'll never forget, you know, this is sort of like the John Chambers Cisco thing after Wang when he laid off all those people. And he said, you know, I'll never do layoffs again. And he said, don't say that because you want to be a CEO. So that's going to happen. But what I'll never do again is overhire out of insecurity because I can't pick one or the other. So I take them both and create a new position. I'll never do that again because those are the people you let go first.
Tim, I appreciate this conversation a great deal, and it's we certainly don't want to demonize people for trying to do good business, you know, and layoffs are a very hard decision and sometimes a very valid decision.
Well, the company, the ledger.
So you're right.
Yeah, you know, the first rule I learned from Stanley Marcus Jr. is the law of the ledger. The law of the ledger says a company is a little baby that can't take care of itself, and if you let it walk across the street, it's going to get runned over.
Yeah.
So it's all of our jobs to protect the ledger, because if the ledger gets broke, you have to turn the lights out and everybody loses. So you have to understand that's the social contract when you take a job.
Yeah, and the only thing, and we have to take a quick break here, but the only thing that's killing me on that is when we do cut people at the bottom and we get big bonuses at the top for doing that, and bonuses that exceed anything that's ever been fathomed in the history.
Well, you know, I have
of compensation.
We should talk about that when I come back. I really think that boards of directors and the VP layer, they need to do a better job fighting that. We just can't vilify these guys because they negotiated a good deal. Otherwise, I got to talk about professional sports.
Sure, absolutely, yeah. And yeah, I mean, greed is out there, but there's also these great corporate leaders that get it too, right? So let's do that after we take this break.
Okay.
We're going to wish we had a lot longer with you, I can already tell, Tim, but you're listening to Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. Please stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. Getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio with myself, Roy Saunderson, and Max Brown. And our guest today, New York Times and international business best-selling author, Tim Sanders. Tim, great to have you on the show, and we've been going in lots of directions here. And I know you are very passionate about the ideas we were just talking about with Max about those wonderful board of directors. And I know you have a view that we shouldn't be regulating the executives' pay, and yet there are people who are feeling that they're not treating the employees right. How do you kind of put that all together and put the fairness in everything here?
So again, you know, I believe people should be taken care of. With that being said, this populist view that every CEO who has employees that have been laid off shouldn't make a dollar this year propagates the idea that the recession is every CEO's fault.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
Because what it's saying is, if you laid people off, you failed. Really? In a broad recession, when Casey Stengel gets, you know, taken down and deregulates the industry and they can create these funky loans and encourage people to have greed and create this false economy and it crashes and it hits Caterpillar?
Mm.
That guy is responsible for the recession? No, that's ridiculous. So what I got to say here is, we're out looking for villains. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're not putting Phil Graham on the stand, who is, in my mind, the number one villain behind this recession.
Yep.
Okay, we're trying to put CEOs on the stand, and if we can't get comfort there, we want to put the bailout bank people on the stand. And we want to look at where they're having their annual meetings, and we're trying to find someone to vent all this anger against.
Right.
And we have to vent it is against the downside of capitalism.
Yeah.
Let's go get Adam Smith. Anyway, I'm off on a tangent. Let me explain my viewpoint here. If we try to blame CEO compensation without proving it's the culprit, just looking at it as something we can get mad about, we're going to create a Russia or an England. Okay? And the reason I say this is if you look at history, there have been times when populist movements have limited how much money a CEO can make during a bad economy, and it's changed forever those economies by chasing out the brightest people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's England, and it's affected them now for 50 years. And it has been Russia since the 60s. There's not very many good business minds left in Russia. They split and went to Finland and created places like Nokia. They went to Sweden. If you look at IKEA's business development layer at the top of the level, you're going to see people that split Eastern Europe and Russia in the 60s when it became impossible to make money. And we're already seeing this with hedge fund talent. It doesn't exist here. The average hedge fund manager is going to be 28 in 2 years. They were 44 5 years ago. We're going to see a delta here. So if you look at the economy and you say Warren Buffett, Larry Ellison, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, and Bill Swanson at Raytheon, and just one other cat, you know, you mentioned these five or six names, you're going to start talking about trillions of dollars of GDP in just a few names. And if they had said early on, there's no upside for me, I'm going to go to Canada because Broad Street loves successful people, or I'm going to go to Western Europe because it's beautiful and you can get good food. If they split at their college age instead of staying here, we're in trouble. And that's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've got to do a better job of is, as investors, we've got to do a better job of understanding what mechanisms are in place to limit overpayment, or to limit payments to CEOs that create PR nightmares for companies. That's what we've got to figure out how to do a better job of, and we've got to let the market correct it.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Now, if we go from the CEO side of things to the frontline employees, I know, I'm going to quote from your book, Lovers, a Killer App, some business books have emphasized recognizing employees, but they're actually grounded in an attitude of material gain and promote a disingenuous appearance of caring. These are the mantras of the airport gift shop books that litter the minds of today's biz folk. So how can we get this, you know, to be real? How can we get recognition, appreciation to be real so that people believe what they are saying?
So the first thing I've learned is we have to treat recognition as a skill, not a thing you do.
Mm-hmm.
So the ability of a manager to organically recognize someone for a job well done, like a specific job well done, is a skill that should be accounted for by measuring the mood state or personal happiness, strength of self-image of every employee in a 360. And your ability to recognize, encourage, and cultivate people should be as equal a part of your compensation program as the revenue you drove or your P&L performance. And there are corporations like SAS Institute that do it that way, who have less than 4% turnover, who don't pay what Mercer would say is the top of their market. And, you know, it's a viewpoint. So if you are serious about recognition, then you have to integrate it into the business as opposed to create it as a rogue program.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not an announcement. It's not a one-time bonus. It's not a cultural health assessment survey. Recognition is something a company's good at doing. Go read a book on Cummins Diesel called The Engine That Could. Cummins Diesel is known as the best company that's integrated recognition into everything they do. So they recognize employees, they recognize vendors, they recognize evangelical customers, they recognize dissatisfied customers that drive their innovation, and it's an integrated thing that changes everything they do, from how they hire, how do they compensate, how do they reward, how do they run meetings and engagements. I mean, it's a really cool story about what happens when you decide that what your company does is your company, above all things, recognizes the human spirit.
Mm-hmm. So what have you seen, and what would you recommend for people to be able to get that integrated? I mean, how do you start?
Everything starts with, you know, how you hire, what you advertise for, what you reward in the annual review process. I can't emphasize that enough. If it's not reviewed in the annual review, then it's not part of your job,
mm-hmm.
especially with somebody who's been around a company for 5 or more years.
Right.
I'm going to get off on a tangent, but this will illustrate this point. One of my consulting clients says, you know, we need to get our employees excited about the customer experience. You know,
right.
We bring in speakers, we hired a consulting company to create a customer experience segmentation, but at the end of the day, our guys don't care. They're busy,
mm-hmm.
they're harried, it's just more work. You know, what can we do to get them to care? I said, let me, you know, look at some of the annual reviews. And so they actually have some video, they actually have some documents I can read, and I go, you're not covering customer experience in the review. You're covering financial metrics, you're covering project progress, but there's no discussion in here on the manager level about accountability on customer experience. There's no bump upside for the actual account managers. If it's not part of the annual review, it's just a speech. So that's the first place we got to put it.
Okay.
But the other issue about recognition is to understand the goal of recognition. And the goal of recognition is justice.
Right, fairness.
When someone's done something right and they've made a difference, it is only fair that that be recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this sense of fairness that drives how engaged we are at work.
Sure.
If we feel like we are being treated fair and our potential is being recognized by outside parties, that gives us that sense of meaning, we can, as Viktor Frankl would say, suffer incredible indignities.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly long plane trips in coach, 30-hour days, I'm kidding, dealing with incredibly upset customers because you're going through a growth curve, et cetera. You can go through all those things if you have a sense of meaning. And there's a lot of ways to have meaning, but you're doing a good job is the ultimate meaning for the average
mm-hmm.
person. And here's why. The personal mission or the purpose of most people at work today is to take care of their family.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So when you're doing a good job at work, you're being a good mom. It translates. That's why recognition can be so precious to people. But we have to have this idea that recognition then is about fairness and justice, which means it has to be approached reasonably scientifically, and it has to be transparent, it has to be organic, but most importantly, it has to be authentic. And when that's the case, then recognition is pretty easy because you can't write a check to give someone meaning.
Right.
So when you look at a lot of these abusive programs or programs that are fake recognition, it's really about it only costs money.
Mm-hmm.
And you spend some money, and you see a bump in cold calls, and you proxy that into converted closes, and it's like the wellness program. We're getting $2.5 for every dollar we spend.
Right.
Right? And that's what I'm talking about is the fake recognition program that goes along.
How do we get beyond fake recognition in the eyes of the CEOs and the senior leaders?
I think we have to, and we can't do it across a big enterprise, but we have to come in contact and get in touch with the stories about the
mm-hmm.
people that work with us and for us. And we have to see them as the same human beings that we were awestruck by when we were growing up. You know, those giants that walk the earth. We have to see that those people work for us. That's why I love that television show, Undercover Boss.
Oh, yeah.
It never fails to break the man who is so in his office, he can't remember the trash picker that makes his business work.
Right.
And this is the same executive who preaches, only do what you love to do. If you don't love to do it, don't do it, which is really easy to say when you're creative, an executive, or an author. Difficult
uh-huh.
to say when you're a server or a trash picker.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think you got to get in touch with your stories, and I can talk later after the break about how to do that. But once you humanize the way you think again and get in touch with the stories of your people, your compassion will take over because it's engineered in every single person. It just gets covered up.
Well, Tim, you've really captured a lot of your own personal passion, but I think also a lot of insights for what leaders need to capture today, especially as we've just kind of branched off and talked a little bit more about recognition. We're going to take a short break at this time. This is Roy Saunderson and Max Brown with our guest today, Tim Sanders. Grateful for the opportunity to talk with him on Real Recognition Radio. We'll be right back.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about: getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and myself, Max Brown, and of course with our guest today, New York Times and international best-selling author Tim Sanders. Tim, as we continue to talk about this, I'm thinking listeners now want to hear a little bit around, okay, so what can we do? What can we do if we're dealing with a situation where we feel maybe stuck or trapped or maybe not the meaning that you've just talked about and that leaders might feel disconnected from, leaders that not because they're bad, but just because they don't see it from that perspective, that the front line picking up trash just doesn't feel valued or appreciated. What do we do with these people who are listening and saying, hey, give us something, give us an idea of what we can do to make our life better?
Well, I mean, the first thing you've got to do is give what you expect to receive. And I talk to a lot of leaders, and I ask them one question. Do you currently have a mentee?
Mm-hmm.
With a graduation date and a goal? And is that mentee not your direct report? Because, I mean, you know, we naturally mentor direct reports because their performance, you know, has an influence on our income.
Right.
But unless there's an ambassador mentee program at your company, it's unlikely that you as the SVP at the bank is actually taking a loan officer under your wing who's only a second year person and showing her the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that the first thing we can do is spread knowledge. And the best way to do that is to find that ambitious, high potential, low recognized person that's at a place that you are at one day,
mm-hmm.
that needs to be shown the ropes and put on a curriculum with a definable graduation date. And you should always have one that's active and one that's about to take the stage. And I do. And I've been doing it for a decade. Because here's what I've learned. You will never get dumber making someone else smarter. And what it will teach you is the abundance mentality. There's no better lesson for the abundance mentality than mentoring someone.
Yeah.
And the other thing I found is that often when you're mentoring, what you're really doing is sharing your success experiences and reliving them, as well as sharing your values, driving them deeper into your own psyche. Mentoring will turn you on more than you think. It sounds like work, but it's a tremendous way to fall into what I call the good loop of life, you know, where you make a difference, you see the positive difference that you're making, and it encourages you to keep doing it. And it is the opposite of what Jim Collins would call the doom loop when he wrote Good to Great, where you do bad things, you get bad feedback, makes you more paranoid, makes you do more bad things, and you fall into this downward spiral of behavior.
So how do we start that? You say it's a mentor program. It's spreading knowledge. It's helping share this knowledge so that people actually feel like, you relive your own success. You start to feel these positive vibrations inside.
So here's what I think, and I'm gonna share with you guys, you know, a little bit of what I've been working on for this next book, Today We Are Rich, about confidence and business confidence. I think that down this path, the first thing you've got to do is you've got to feed your mind good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So effective immediately, you know, you need to be as judicious about what you put into your head and who you hang out with as you are what you put into your mouth.
Yes.
And the reason why is that, you know, the greatest mentors that get the most out of the practice are the people that are the most educated on an ongoing basis, not just when they're in college. These people are hungry for knowledge. So that's what they feed their minds. They don't read gossip pages and spend 3 hours a day on Facebook and weed whack through 700 emails because they can't teach their people not to copy them on everything. They spend an hour or two every day, like Mark Cuban, like Bill Gates, like Steve Jobs. They spend an hour or two every day reading about the future on a deep level.
Mm-hmm.
Cuban reads a book every other day, cover to cover.
Mm-hmm.
He finds the time by pushing back. He does this because he knows that deep knowledge is powerful knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing you got to do is feed your mind good stuff and stop watching cable news, etc. This stuff's just awful. It has no intention to educate you. It's there to alarm you and to glue you to the TV set. And we've got to feed our mind good stuff. The second thing we got to do is move the conversation forward.
Mm-hmm.
We have to talk more at an intellectual level about solutions. If we're going to challenge people, let's challenge people to be smart, not perfect.
Yes.
Right? So let's change the conversation, because when I go to companies, and it's not all technology companies, when I go to Campbell's Soup, I just came from Rich's Products outside of Buffalo, New York, very aggressive, innovative, smart company. They make things like Rich's Creamer. Sit around and talk to their leaders. It's sort of like a college dorm room environment. It's very academic. It's about studies and statistics and concepts and ideas and business trends and freakonomics and that kind of thing. And you go to some company that's sick culturally and just trying to survive 90 days, and what do you hear? You talk about rumors about the guy in the other BU. You talk about competitors. You talk about stuff you heard on Squawk Box. It's not an academic conversation. So we've got to change the conversation at work. And the last thing I'll say is chicken little must fry. You know, we have to stop rewarding people that bring bad news into our organization. But we reward them because it's macho, right? You're not going to get fired for being paranoid. So when someone comes to work and says, our competitors are killing us, look at this news article, thought everybody would want to see this, stop rewarding that.
Mm-hmm.
Because as Terry Simmel said to us once at Yahoo, you can't hate Google enough to improve the search experience for our customer by 1%. So we've got to move the conversation forward to a solution focus and not just this bonfire of paranoia that we all seem to take great comfort in.
Yes, yes. I'm just taking that down. So can you give us some examples of great leaders? You talked about Rich's Foods. What about great leaders specifically that helped to inspire and carry this flag, if you will?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people that think about it. I like Ray Anderson at Interface, the carpet company outside of LaGrange, Georgia. I mean, you know, Ray Anderson has learned to equate family to motivation. So, for example, what makes Interface unique is that they promote sustainability, carpet company, green carpet company, no impact on the planet. And instead of, like, you know, trying to encourage his people to do without for their energy efficiency and waste reduction program, which saved $300 million, instead of just encouraging them to do without to save the company money, he honestly shared with them his personal philosophy that companies that have externalities are stealing from the future.
Mm-hmm.
We're stealing from our own grandkids. We're stealing good air days and clean weather days and safe days, and we're just stealing them. And so he was able to equate family values in a powerful but honest way, and so people that worked there felt a sense of higher purpose. They called them greenskates. Those are cheapskates with a higher sense of purpose. They use a pencil all the way down to the eraser. It's a point of pride at that organization. I remember one day a forklift driver at Interface was driving a pallet of carpets across the factory, and a visiting executive from DuPont noticed that he was singing and having a great time, and so she stopped him and said, "What are you doing?" And he says, "Excuse me? I'm saving the world." And he explained to her the sustainability program he was part of, and then he stopped and said, "Hey, if I don't get this pallet from here to that wall over there, our waste figures will go through the roof."
Mm-hmm.
Puts his headphones back on, starts singing again, and drives off, and she says, "That's what I want our people to have." That's what Ray did.
And yet it was a very, very brave thing for him to do, because I remember a lot of these articles written about him in so many ways to say that this is going to cost us money up front, but in the future it will pay dividends. And it obviously has, but there was an upfront commitment, wasn't there?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Let's talk about this. It's 1994. He wants to make this big change. The board pushes back. It's a public company. They said, you know, it's a really small market you're going for. You know, basically the government market. So he says, okay, how about this? Because he's a math guy. He says, how about we spend 3 years on reduction and reuse?
Yep.
And we're going to save a bunch of money, and you're going to document it. You're going to recognize it, but you're only going to report half of it. You're going to give the rest to me. So starting in 98, I can start spending money on things like recycling or alternative ingredients to nylon. And
yep.
That's how he did it. So he saved $300 million.
Yeah.
He only got back about $70 to spend, but the other $230 saved their bacon in 99 when the economy crashed because they're off.
Right.
You know? But that's how he did it. And I talk to people a lot about this. You know, you can change the world, and the first place that it always starts with is, what can I do that saves money and generates meaning at the same time?
Yes. So how do we encourage this abundance mentality to flourish at our work, as opposed to maybe the examples of survive and watch my back and, you know, only looking out for me mentality? And I'm not suggesting that people can't make great money and, you know, and flourish and profit for being great leaders and for being great people. I think that's fantastic, and we should reward great people. But I'm talking about this abundance mentality and how that is so much bigger, as you talk about, than this narcissistic or self-egocentric position that just only serves self and actually destroys workplaces.
Well, I'll speak to leaders here. Now, the best thing you can do to conquer this scarcity mindset, you know, that you might
yeah.
have not enough to go around, the best thing you can ever do is to give your way out of that situation. This is what I talk to leaders about a lot at companies where they've had big rifts. So people are doing, you know, twice as much work with half as much time, and they're really stuck. And
yeah.
when you talk to them about their shortfall, their lack is time. I lack time. And they're almost desperate. They lack so much time. And, you know, a lot of this is really driven by their poor time management skills, their willingness to let all of their employees get self-gratification, you know, the fact that they're just crazy enough to carry around a phone all the time, which I don't do. They're doing all these things wrong. And so I explain, you know, the reason you lack time is that you don't value time enough.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you valued time more, you wouldn't agree to so many things you agree to, and you'd have a lot
mm-hmm.
more time. So what I tell people is, give what you think you lack. So if you're telling me I don't even have enough time to have lunch, then I say that the solution is for you to take on a new mentee at work and give her 2 hours a week of your precious time that you don't have. And as you watch her grow and succeed and flourish, you will become jealous for all the other time you can't give to other people in the future, and it'll change you. Because this lack is an illusion based on our insecurities, often cultivated by poor leadership environments above us.
Mm-hmm.
But we live in a very cool world where leadership can be redefined at the middle of an organization. Because the top's in fast rotation. It's like an NFL football club. If you don't like the
yeah.
way the head guy's running it, don't worry, the new guy next year is going to be better. Take
right.
care of the offensive line for now. That's how it really works in business now.
Mm-hmm.
There's these leaders of the business units at an enterprise level, and there's these guys that own the budget at the small company level. She may only own a $40 million budget. It may be a $2 million budget. Those are what we used to call the mid-managers, are what
yeah.
I like to call the second wave of leadership. And those are the people that can change the culture of an organization by setting an example. Last thing here. As much as we talk about fear and how powerful that is,
yeah.
never discount the power of contagious compassion. Because
yeah.
compassion is highly contagious, just like success. And when we create an environment where we say, one of the ways we generate customer satisfaction is by taking care of employees, eventually it gets through to your people. And it can reshape the culture at the manager's supervisor level. And the last thing I'll tell you is that, getting back to recognition, no recognition is more appreciated than your own boss.
Mm.
You know, getting a signed letter from the head of the department or the chairman, I mean, that's nice to show your kids. But when the person you work for every day looks you in the eyes, put his hand on your shoulder and say, you're making things work here, it affects you deeply on the inside, and it changes.
No, absolutely.
But that's where we have to change this culture.
Well, I think this is, again, what a wonderful conversation, Tim. We do have to take a quick break. But when we come back, let's continue that conversation, kind of wrap this all together. For Real Recognition Radio, this is Max Brown and Roy Saunderson, reminding you to keep it real. We'll be right back.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. Getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio. We're going to continue our conversation with Tim Sanders today and learn some final pointers on making a difference at work. And as I was listening to the section you just had with Max there, and you talked about the second wave of leadership. What skill set would you say leaders are going to need going forward to get us out of the quote-unquote economic kind of downfall that we've gone through?
I just think we have to encourage innovation and customer satisfaction in everything that we do, and that's what takes us to the top, and that's what will dig us out, and historically speaking, that always works. So I think that we have to just buck up and decide that innovation is still a game changer, and the innovation doesn't mean saving a dollar here and there. So I think mm-hmm. that, you know, we have to adopt that paradigm change.
So how do we spark the innovation that's so desperately needed?
So, you know, it's ironic that I would come back to this over and over again on this show, but it just comes down to the same idea here. We've got to make it part of the hiring, rewards, succession process. And we need to make it so down to the edges of the field.
Yeah.
So if you value innovation and it's something that you want to communicate it with how you make decisions on candidates, pay them, reward them either emotionally or financially, because remember, the emotional reward during the annual review is a game changer for like the first mm-hmm. three layers of every company. You need to make it part of the HR process if you care about it. Innovation isn't a speech or a training program.
Right. And would you say that some of the troubles that we've gotten into is that you used the term integrating earlier on in the show, is that we haven't integrated it and we've made it too isolated, too boundary specific?
Think about who approves annual review metrics. Where does that come from? Does it come out of HR, or do the generalists go meet with the finance group and get it approved? That's what it usually happens. Maybe the mm-hmm. legal group comes along for the ride. That's a problem, because then the annual review always backs up into financial metrics. So even, you know, on a person who doesn't generate revenue, at the end of the day, the annual review is about performance as it relates to revenue two or three clicks down the line. There really
right.
never is a situation where you're sitting with someone in an annual review and they say, you know, I see that you had three or four great ideas on the green program that Community Affairs had going, and we want to move you up to exceeds expectations because of that.
Mm.
Yet the CEO, every time he goes out and gives a speech, talks about green as their number one priority. Still, at very few companies does the CEO's commitment to green filter all the way down into an ad hoc recognition or the annual review program. Now, there are companies where it does. We mentioned one of them, Interface.
Right.
Walmart's another one that's been doing it since probably 06, thanks to Adam Warbach. Green Mountain Coffee Roasters has been doing it for about 10 years. So there are companies that take what the CEO cares about and make it part of the annual review process, even when it's not part of the job description, but they're few and far between. You'd be shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I always talk about. When I talk at SHRM or other conferences with HR leaders, I always say, you know, you should take the annual report and the annual review, and you should put them side to side and see how synchronized you are with vision.
Wow, that'd be a very unique
That which you
process.
Review, you multiply.
Yeah.
So if you sit down in an annual review and you say, okay, you showed up at work every day, I don't have any complaints about you,
mm-hmm.
You didn't spend too much money, and the big customer is still with us. So you get meets expectations, because
yep.
I can only give out one good mark this year.
That's right.
Think about the culture you're building. That's all I'm saying. How in the world can that person go back to work, and then you tell them, hey, and by the way, be innovative, and they go, okay, if I find the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it boils down to that.
You know, there are companies, I can't mention the name of this defense contractor because of an NDA, but there are companies, too, that have understood the science of happiness. So they begin to hold managers responsible for the happiness, the overall level of life happiness of their employees. And they enforce it, and this isn't the most scientific part, but it's reasonably good. They enforce it by having video cameras take pictures of the faces of every employee as they enter and leave buildings. And using Ekman's analysis, Paul Ekman studied emotional leakage, you can pretty much tell the average depression level or the average happiness level of a person. And you can proxy that into an entire group. And you can say, Tim, on a scale of 1 to 10, your group has a happiness factor of 6, and that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to affect your pay. It's going to change the way I lead.
Right, right.
It's going to reduce turnover, increase engagement, drive innovation. Now, as crazy as that sounds, aren't we being crazier the way we do it these days?
Sure, sure.
So, you know, what you want to generate must be rewarded, period.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Good comments. Tim, we're getting towards the end of our show. We want to capture, tell us and our listeners, some of the work that you're doing right now.
So, you know, really, I just finished this new book, so I can't wait to share all these principles of total confidence. And you can go to timsanders.com and follow me on social media to get these ideas. But I speak at a lot of conferences these days about how to build better relationships, how to network, how to mentorize, as I mentioned before, and how to rethink the customer experience around issues like justice and emotional quality and those things, as opposed to just satisfaction and loyalty. And I consult with a few companies on HR, specifically trying to close gaps in either pride, engagement, or unity.
Right.
You know, we could talk a whole thing on this, but, you know, sometime we can talk about this concept. But one of the biggest things I'm hearing from companies is how can we take this federation of states and have a company?
Hmm.
Because a lot of companies are like, if we could just bring to bear the whole thing as one, like student body right, we
right.
wouldn't have the problems in the space we're having, but we can't.
So has there been any surprises from your research you'd like to share? Any kind of one, two surprise points that as you gleaned from your latest book writings?
You know, I would say this, and I'll finish with this idea, and it's from the new book, Saving the World at Work, the newest one I've published. When all else fails, give your people daylight. As Bill Strickland mm-hmm. from the Bidwell Center, daylight is a cure for spiritual cancer. If you put your people in the dark, they're going to act like mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
If you put them in prisons, they're going to act like prisoners. Whatever you do, keep your people in the daylight. If you don't have daylighting at work, talk to facilities about it. It changes everything. It's got an incredible ROI.
Mm.
If your people are stuck in the dark all the time, have a meeting outside next time it's sunny. Rotate people like they do at SAS Institute, where nobody has to sit in the dark for more than a quarter. Just think about the value of sunlight and ask yourself, what if our competitors are getting more sun than us? Just think about that. That's how dehumanized we become at work. I talk to people and I go, how much sunlight does your average person have? And they look at me blankly. I don't know. I mean, they've got enough light to read.
Right. But not necessarily sunlight, right?
That was an unusual thing, is that, you know, one of the most human things we can do at work is to let the sun shine in.
Yes, yes. A simple act that we've taken for granted as we've become so technical, and with all the lighting that we have, it's just not real anymore.
That's right. And for the people listening, just go Google the phrase, light in a hose. Light in a hose. It's a product out, a Minnesota product, Aveda Corporation has it. It's these light collectors that sit on the top of buildings. It's not solar.
Yep.
What it does is it captures the sunlight, the UV sunlight, and it filters it through the system in place of fluorescent lighting.
My goodness.
Wow. It has a magical effect on people. Light in a hose. There's your think piece for the day.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, you've certainly shared some great light for us on the workplace and on people and on leadership. One final pointer, what would your best piece of advice that you'd like to sum up and give our audience today on making a difference at work?
And again, it's going to be a tactical piece of advice. Don't go online the first hour you get up. When you get up in the morning, spend 15 minutes doing a gratitude exercise about two of your people that helped you yesterday and a person you know is going to help you today, and write them a note. Invest that 15 minutes instead of getting online and reading 100 emails and surfing the internet or reading the newspaper. It'll change you, because breakfast is the most important meal, not just for your body, but for your mind. So start up, give yourself a chance.
That's wonderful. Very profound, as we've become so attached to our wonderful computers these days.
Yeah, it's an addiction. As Seth Godin would say, the reason we check our email every 10 minutes and look at our Facebook updates, not because the information is important, it's the state we are in.
I think you're right there, Tim. Tim, if people want to reach out and connect with you, what would be the best way to find you, your URL and any other?
Yeah, just go to timsanders.com. It has links to everything, my Facebook page for my new book, Twitter, YouTube, and my blog, Sanders Says.
Wow, that's wonderful. Tim, it's been great to have you on the show today. Appreciate
you
having been here.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Well, tune in for our next show, where Max and I will be continuing our wonderful discovery and discussion on how to create better workplaces and develop positive relationships. And we invite you and encourage you for you to send in your comments and suggestions to us. Just simply email us at feedback@realrecognition.com. Look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening to Real Recognition Radio. For more information about the Recognition Management Institute, you can find us at realrecognition.com. Until next time, this is Roy Sonneson and Max Brown reminding you to keep it real.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Sonneson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.